Assalamu alaikum, students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, the Virtual University of Pakistan, and Mubashir Humayun, I welcome you to another lecture in financial management. In today's lecture, we will continue our discussion of capital structure theory, which we started off in the previous lecture, and we will talk about the changes and improvements that were made in the Miller-Modigliani theory of capital structure. In today's lecture, and in the following one, we will use the theory to come up with some practical examples and to solve real-world problems. Before I move on with the new material, let me just go over some of the older material from the previous lectures. Financial management case area mein hum capital structure ke bare mein baat kar rahe hain, aur capital structure ki ibtida humne weighted average cost of capital ke concept se ki thi. Ye ek bahut bunyadi concept hai karobar ka, aur iski bunyad ye hai ki misal ke taur pe agar koi karobari tijarat karta hai aur wo koi items, koi real assets, misal ke taur pe میری جیب میں پین ہے, دس از اے ریئل ایسٹ, یا کہ اگر وہ کوئی گلاسز, اس قسم کی ایسٹس وہ اگر کسی ایک ملک سے, مثال کے طور پہ اگر کوئی تائیوان جاتا ہے یا سنگاپور جاتا ہے, وہاں سے وہ ریئل ایسٹس لے کے پاکستان واپس آتا ہے, فرق قسم کے ریئل ایسٹس, پینز, گلاسز, موبائل فونز, تو جب وہ وہاں سے یہ ساری چیزیں خریدتا ہے تو اس کی ایک درمیانی قیمت ہوتی ہے اس کے ذہن میں, ایوریج کاسٹ. اور جب وہ پاکستان یہ آئٹمس لے کے آتا ہے اور ان کو بیچتا ہے تو ان کو بیچنے کے وقت اس کے ذہن میں یہ درمیانی قیمت ہوتی ہے, اور اس کا ٹارگٹ یہ ہوتا ہے کہ اس کی درمیانی قیمت جس پہ وہ آئٹمس بیچتا ہے وہ درمیانی کاسٹ سے یا پرچیز پرائس سے زیادہ ہونی چاہیے. اسی طرح جب کمپنیز یا فرمز سرمایہ جمع کرتی ہیں انویسٹر سے, چاہے وہ ڈیٹ ہولڈرز ہوں یا سٹاک ہولڈرز ہوں اس کمپنی کے, جب کوئی بھی فرم سرمایہ اکٹھا کر رہی ہوتی ہے تو اس کو یہ حساب ضرور لگانا ہوتا ہے کہ وہ سرمایہ کی قیمت کیا ہے جو اس کو ادا کرنی ہے, اور یہ بنیادی سوال ہے اس وجہ سے کیونکہ اس کو مد نظر رکھتے ہوئے اس کو یہ فیصلہ کرنا ہے کہ جہاں بھی وہ کمپنی خود سرمایہ اپنا لگا رہی ہے اس کی ریٹ آف ریٹرن جو ہے وہ اس قیمت سے زیادہ ہونی چاہیے, نہیں تو کوئی فائدہ نہیں ہوا. مثال کے طور پہ اگر کوئی کمپنی 10% پہ قرضہ لے رہی ہے کسی بینک سے, اور وہ پیسہ وہ کسی ایسی پروجیکٹ یا انویسٹمنٹ میں لگا رہی ہے جس کی ریٹ آف ریٹرن 10% سے زیادہ نہیں ہے, تو پھر فائدہ نہیں ہوا قرضہ لینے کا. سو وی ڈیفائن دی ویٹڈ ایوریج کاسٹ آف کیپیٹل ایز دی سم آف دی weighted costs for debt, preferred stock and common equity. Now we will focus our attention in the remaining part of the capital structure simply on debt and equity, and by equity we will refer to common equity. So we won't worry about preferred equity because it is generally quite rare in any case. We then spoke about business risk, and we said that just like single stocks had a risk which we defined as being equal to the company-specific risk plus the market risk. Similarly, single companies and firms also have a standalone risk, which is defined as the business risk plus the financial risk. We talked in detail about operating leverage and how it increases the business risk. And we mentioned that operating leverage is defined as the fixed cost divided by the total cost. And we said operating leverage can be good, provided that the company's sales are higher than its break-even point. In any case, operating leverage will generally always increase the level of risk. Then we spoke about financial risk, which we said is created and caused by debt. And we mentioned that the financial leverage is defined as the value of debt in the company divided by the total assets. We also mentioned that the financial leverage can be beneficial, provided that the overall return of the company, as measured by EBIT divided by total assets, is higher than the cost of debt or interest. This is what I was talking about when I was giving you the example of a businessman who buys simple consumer goods like pens and glasses and mobile phones from abroad and sells them in Pakistan. It's a similar concept. So we then mentioned that if financial leverage increases the overall risk as well as the return as measured by the return on equity or ROE, then how do we know if financial leverage is good and how much financial leverage or debt is good for a company? And the answer is partly provided to us by the capital structure theory. We talked about the founders of the formal capital structure theory, Professors Milan and Modigliani. That was a long time back in 1958. And a lot of changes have been made to their theory since then in order to make it more practical and relevant to real-world problems. If you stick to the Miller-Modigliani or MM theory in its purest form, original form, which assumes that there are no taxes and there are no bankruptcy costs and that every investor in the market has equal amount of information, then the conclusion is that capital structure or leverage has absolutely no consequence or effect on the value of a firm, as measured by the NPV formula that we studied at the beginning of this course. Why is this? Well, simply because, as we have been mentioning, the value of a firm, the value of working assets, is determined by the future cash flows generated by the firm. And if those future cash flows are not changing, no matter how much you change the capital structure, it will have no bearing on the value of the firm. Remember that the value of the firm, so far we have calculated using the net present value formula, and that just takes into account the cash flows and the required rate of return. And Miller and Modigliani theory in its purest form assumes that changes in the amount of debt in a company will not change the required rate of return. Now this is a very, very big assumption. It's convenient because it allows us to separate investment decisions from corporate financing and capital structure decisions, but only in the ideal sense. So now let's study in closer detail the applications of the trade-off theory, which takes into account taxes as well as bankruptcy costs, and the signaling theory, which highlights the importance that whenever a company raises money in the form of debt or equity, it is giving a signal to the investors and to the market. If a company is raising money through debt, then it is giving a signal that its future cash flows will be healthy. And if it is raising money in the form of equity, then it is giving a signal that maybe the future cash flows are uncertain and possibly weak. So the first thing that we should look at is, what is the effect of leverage on the cost of equity and on the cost of debt? Because we need to know both of these things in order to find out what the effect of leverage is on the weighted average cost of capital. Now, let's take a look at, first of all, the effect of leverage on the cost of debt. We have talked about this already. When a company takes more and more borrowing, its financial risk increases. Therefore, the lenders and the banks that are lending money to this company will increase their interest rate because this company has now become more risky. As the company takes on even more debt and an excessive amount of debt, then the chances of this company going bankrupt arise. And now the banks become very concerned and they increase the interest rate by a substantial amount. So, in conclusion, the effect of leverage on the cost of debt is that as leverage increases, the debt cost will continuously increase. Now let's talk about the effect of leverage on the cost of equity. Well, they're related. Why? Because when the leverage or the amount of debt that a company has increases, then the overall risk of the company goes up. Therefore, the beta of its stock goes up. Therefore, the required return on the share goes up. And therefore, the cost of equity goes up. And I'm using the formulas from the capital asset pricing model here, that whenever the risk goes up or the beta of a stock goes up, then the required rate of return of that stock will go up, and therefore the cost of stock or the cost of equity will also go up. So in conclusion then, increasing the level of debt in a company or increasing the leverage will lead to a continuous increase in the cost of equity as well. Now, according to the Miller-Modigliani theory in its purest form or most ideal form, the value of a firm is unchanged. In other words, Miller-Modigliani said that even if you change the capital structure or the amount of debt in a company, this will not have any effect on the value of the company. And therefore, according to them, it has no effect on the weighted average cost of capital for this company. Because if it had an effect on the weighted average cost of capital, it would also change the value of the company. Now, this is an unrealistic conclusion. But if we take a look at the conclusion that we have reached so far and visualize it on a graph, then the concept will become a little bit clearer in your minds. So if you take a look at the slide, you will see the pure or ideal Miller-Modigliani or MM view of the markets. These are ideal markets without taxes, without bankruptcy costs, and where everybody has the same amount of information. You will see cost of capital on the y-axis and the debt to equity ratio on the x-axis. And the debt to equity ratio is proportional to the leverage. Now, the thing to note is that according to the pure Miller-Modigliani theory, the weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, is fixed or constant, and it's represented by a straight line that you see starting at the point RE on the y-axis and going flatly across to the right. The weighted average cost of capital is equal to RDXD plus REXE, assuming no preferred stock. And I just mentioned and explained to you how when the leverage, or in the case of this graph, how when the debt-to-equity ratio increases, both the cost of equity, as represented by the curved line higher up, will increase, and also how as the leverage increases, or as you move to the right of this graph, the RD, or cost of debt, curve will also rise or increase. So increasing leverage will lead to an increase in both the cost of debt and the cost of equity. But according to Miller and Modigliani, the weighted average cost of capital will remain unchanged. How can this be? How can this be? Well, in the real world, generally speaking, it cannot be. We will talk about the real world calculations in a short while. But before that, let's do a simple example of the calculation for the cost of equity and the weighted average cost of capital, assuming the Miller-Modigliani theory in its purest form. And we will take a look at a firm which has a certain capital structure, and we will see how when the leverage or the debt in that firm increases, what impact it has on the cost of equity and the weighted average cost of capital. So if you take a look at the slide, you will see the example of a 100% equity firm, or an unlevered firm, which has total assets of 1,000 rupees. It has a WACC for the unlevered company, which I've called WACC U, of 21%, and since the company is unlevered and has no debt, the unlevered WACC is equal to the cost of equity. This company then decides to add 400 rupees of debt, and it then is subject to financial risk, and its cost of debt increases to 13%. So we need to find out what the levered firm's cost of equity, or REL, and the weighted average cost of capital for the levered firm, WACL, is equal to. Now, assuming a pure MM view and ideal markets, the total market value of assets for a firm is unchanged. The total market value is referred to as V. Therefore, the value of the unlevered firm is equal to the value of the levered firm, according to the pure Miller-Modigliani view. So VU is equal to VL. And by VU, I'm not referring to the university, but simply to the unlevered value. Also, the WACC is unchanged by the capital structure and debt. Therefore, the WACU is equal to the WACL. In other words, it is equal to 21%. It is unchanged. Now, what about the cost of equity? According to the pure form of Miller-Modigliani, the cost of equity for the levered firm, or REL, is equal to WACC plus D divided by E multiplied by WACC minus RDL, where RDL represents the cost of debt for the levered company. And that is equal to 21% plus 400 divided by 600 multiplied by 21 minus 13%. That is equal to 26.3%. There is also another way of calculating the cost of equity, and that is equal to the WACC minus RDXD all divided by XE. And this is basically the definition of WACC with the old formula rearranged. And in this way, you will also find that the result is the same, 26.3%. So, please take a look carefully at the two formulas for calculating the cost of equity for the levered firm, or REL. One formula is simply the rearrangement of the definition of WACC solved for RE without considering preferred stock. And the other one is the equation that you see on the top, REL is equal to WACC plus D divided by E times WACC minus RDL. That is basically an equation that has been derived from the assumption in the case that the cost of equity rises in a straight line. And in that case, we can derive a formula like this, and we can apply it to the case where the equity does not rise in a straight line, the cost of equity. I'll talk more about that a little later as well. The other thing that I would like to point out here is that when we are doing these numerical calculations of weighted average cost of capital, WACC, and cost of equity, then I make references to variables with the subscripts D and L and so on. D always stands for debt, L stands for levered, and E stands for equity. U stands for unlevered case, which is 100% equity. The other relationship that you should be familiar with is that the market value is what we are focusing on here in financial management, and the market value, or V, is equal to the total asset value of the firm, which is equal to debt plus equity. So V is equal to D plus E. The other final notation that you should be familiar with and relationship is that the in fractional form, XD plus XE is equal to 1, where XD represents the fraction of debt. XD is equal to D divided by V, and that is what we have been calling financial leverage all along. XD is basically equal to the financial leverage. And XE is equal to E divided by V. So XD plus XE is equal to 1. Now, finally, on this slide, I would just like you to note that the cost of equity for the levered firm is equal to the risk-free interest rate plus business risk premium plus the financial risk premium. And let me explain this point. So you can interpret the increasing slope of the cost of equity line in terms of the concepts we have spoken about earlier, the cost of equity for a levered firm with debt is equal to the risk-free rate of return plus the business risk premium plus the financial risk premium. And this is one way to connect the cost of equity for a levered firm with the concepts of risk and premium that we spoke about earlier. Now, as I mentioned before, we have been talking about the ideal case of Miller Modigliani, where there are no taxes and no bankruptcy costs. But please remember from the previous lecture that when there are taxes and bankruptcy costs, then we spoke about the trade-off theory. And in the trade-off theory, the essential point to remember is that initially the value of the stock or the value of the firm rises because of the tax saving associated with interest tax shields, and then after that the value of the firm or the value of the stock begins to decline, and that is because of the excessive amount of financial risk in the form of bankruptcy risk that starts when the firm is excessively leveraged. Now, when we talk about that maximum point for the value of the firm, recalling the old trade-off theory, then that point, that optimal point for capital structure, is the same point where the value of the weighted average cost of capital is minimized. So that's the best point for a firm to operate at. That's the best ratio of debt to equity, and that's the best point of financial leverage. Now, let us try to understand how we actually come up with the shape of the cost of equity line for the case of the pure Miller-Modigliani theory. How do we actually calculate the different points from which we can derive the shape of the cost of equity curve? Because that is the most important cost for us to understand. The cost of equity to the shareholders is very important because you remember that the objective in financial management is to maximize shareholder wealth. So we are interested most of all in the cost of equity for the shareholders. Why? Because you will recall that the objective in financial management is to maximize shareholder wealth. We're interested in the owners of common equity, who are the owners of the company. And that is why we're spending some time in calculating the correct cost of equity, because we would use that to value the shares, and we will also use that for maximization of shareholder wealth. Now, let us take a look at the slide and go through a table of numerical calculations which will show you how we can calculate the cost of equity at different levels of leverage ratios or different levels of debts, and then we can compute what the actual values of cost of equity are like based on the formulas that I just showed you a short while earlier, and then we can graph them and take a look at the shape of the cost of equity line. So if you take a look at the slide, you'll see that for the case of the pure Miller-Modigliani or MM ideal market, we are assuming that this is the case of the ideal market where the total market value of the assets of the firm as represented by V, which is equal to the debt plus the equity, is unchanged. That is the fundamental premise of Miller-Modigliani in its purest form. The market value of the firm is unchanged by the capital structure or the leverage. And so let us calculate what the cost of equity for this firm would be like as you change the level of debt or the leverage ratio. So when you take a look at the table on the slide, you will see that we start with the unlevered firm where the debt is zero rupees. And for the case of the unlevered firm, the interest that it pays is naturally zero because there's no debt. The value of the equity is equal to the value of the firm, and that is equal to 1,000 rupees. The cost of equity is equal to 21%, which was given to you as the weighted average cost of capital for the company because there is no debt. So the cost of capital for the entire company is equal to the cost of equity in the case of the unlevered company only. Next, when you add 200 rupees of debt, then the interest that you have to pay is minimal. It's the risk-free rate of interest, 10%. Now, the equity has come down to 800 rupees. Why? Because 200 rupees is debt. And Miller Modigliani tells us to assume that the total value V is constant. So it has to still equal to 1,000. And if you add the value of equity, 800 rupees, to the value of debt, 200 rupees, you will get 1,000 rupees. Finally, we can calculate the cost of equity for the case of 200 rupees debt. That is equal to RE, which is equal to 21% minus 10% times 0.2, all divided by 0.8. And that is equal to 23.75%. Now, I'm not going to go through the calculations for each of the lines. If you go down and take a look at the cost of equity for each of the lines, you will see that as the level of debt increases from 0 rupees to 500 rupees, the cost of equity increases from 21% all the way to 45%. And this is not just a straight line increase, but you can actually plot the points for the cost of equity on the graph, and you will see that it increases in an accelerated fashion. It increases with a shallow slope at first, and then the slope increases. Of course, let me remind you that in the real world, when a firm takes on more and more borrowing and more debt, and when its leverage increases, the level of risk of that firm increases, and that affects the value of the firm. But Miller Modigliani, in its purest form, does not take that into account. Now, let us take a look again at the graph I showed you earlier. And this time, we can focus on the shape of the curves and the formulas that we spoke about earlier. Taking a look at the slide again, you'll see that according to the pure MM view of ideal markets, we have the graph of cost of capital on the y-axis and debt to equity ratio on the x-axis, which is representative of the financial leverage. Now, when the debt to equity ratio is zero at the origin, you'll see that I have written 100% equity firm, or the unlevered firm. When the firm is unlevered, then its cost of equity is equal to its weighted average cost of capital, because there is no debt. Now, take a look at the straight line representing the weighted average cost of capital in the case of the pure Miller-Modigliani world. The formula for weighted average cost of capital is equal to RDXT plus REXE. And notice how, as the company adds more and more debt, in other words, as the debt-to-equity ratio increases, and as you move to the right, the line, the curved line at the top, continues to increase and accelerate. The slope of the line increases as the debt-to-equity ratio increases. And this cost of equity, or RE curve, is rising at an accelerating pace because the financial risk compounds. And when the company has taken on too much debt, then added to that, you have the bankruptcy risk and the cost of financial distress. And that increases the rate at which the owners of common equity demand a higher return. So the formula for the cost of equity is equal to WACC plus D divided by E multiplied by WACC minus RD. The point to remember regarding the case of the pure Miller-Modigliani model is that we have come up with very simplified formulas for calculating the cost of equity for a company, assuming that the total value of the firm and the weighted average cost of capital is unchanged. And if you make that assumption, then it is quite easy to calculate what the cost of equity should be for a levered company. Of course, as I keep mentioning, in reality, the situation is different. When a firm adds debt, it changes the value of the firm and it changes the weighted average cost of capital. And just to show you what I mean visually, let us take a look at the graph before we discuss it in detail numerically. So if you look at the slide, you will see what the reality is like. In real markets, I've shown the graph of the traditionalist view. This diagram of the weighted average cost of capital is known as the traditionalist diagram of capital structure. And it's the same graph with cost of capital on the y-axis and debt to equity ratio on the x-axis. But the point to note is, and there are two points to note. First one is that the cost of equity, which is the curve at the top, REL, for the levered firm, increases in reality at a much faster pace than the curve that you saw earlier in the pure Miller-Modigliani worldview. Similarly, the cost of debt on this graph increases at a faster pace than the cost of debt in the diagram that we saw for the pure Miller-Modigliani model. And finally, the most important point and the most important difference between this traditionalist view and the earlier pure Miller-Modigliani view is that the weighted average cost of capital line has now become curved, and it's a curved parabola, a U-shaped flat curve with a minimum point. And that minimum point is the point of optimal capital structure. It is the point of minimum weighted average cost of capital. It is the point of maximum value for the firm. And it is the best point in terms of the debt to equity ratio for a company to operate at. And we can understand the shape of this curve based on our earlier discussions, because initially the weighted average cost of capital comes down as you move away from the y-axis towards the optimal point. The WACC drops, and it drops because of the interest rate tax shield provided by debt. And then after the optimal point, the weighted average cost of capital continues to rise up again. Why? Because of the high bankruptcy risk and costs, and because they begin to outweigh the benefits of the interest tax shield. So in this particular lecture, we have covered a lot of theoretical concepts from capital structure theory. We've spoken about specifically two very important cases, the case of the pure Miller-Modigliani world, where the value of the firm and the weighted average cost of capital is entirely unaffected by changes in the capital structure and debt. That was one case. And the second case that we just looked at, which we will talk about more in the following lecture, is the case of the real world. And here, this is known as the traditionalist view. And in this case, we make the more realistic model in which the weighted average cost of capital for a firm reaches a minimum point, which is the point for optimal capital structure. So now let us turn our attention to the case of the traditionalist view. And they took into account the impact of taxes and bankruptcy costs on the cost of equity, the cost of debt, and the weighted average cost of capital. So let us take a look at a simple example which will help us to understand how the weighted average cost of capital is calculated in practical life. In order to calculate the WACC for companies that have taken on debt, we need to know a couple of more things, and this data includes the tax rate and the earnings before interest and taxation, or EBIT, for a particular firm. So let's take a look at this particular example. In the traditionalist view, we have formulated this example. The example is similar to the one we were doing earlier, but we've added some new data. This case of the 100% equity firm or unlevered firm, which had total assets of 1,000 rupees. It had a weighted average cost of capital, or WACC U, for the unlevered company of 21%. And this firm then decides to add 400 rupees of debt at a cost or at an interest rate of 13%. Now, we need to find out what the levered firm's cost of equity, or REL, and the levered firm's weighted average cost of capital, or WACC L, is equal to. We're also told that the corporate tax rate for this firm is 30% on the earnings before taxation, and the earnings before interest and taxation, or EBIT, is equal to 300 rupees. Please note the difference between EBT and EBIT. The traditionalist view is based on practical reality. Leverage provides interest tax savings or a tax shield, but it also increases the financial risk. And excessive leverage leads to bankruptcy risk. And the increase in risk will change the value of the firm and the weighted average cost of capital. Now, we can calculate the weighted average cost of capital as follows. First of all, we need to calculate the value of the equity for this firm. And that is equal to the formula that you can see on the slide. E is equal to the net income divided by the cost of equity. Please remember that the net income is defined as EBIT minus interest minus tax. And that is equal to EBT minus tax. Therefore, the net income is equal to EBIT minus XDRD, all multiplied by 1 minus TC. Here, TC represents the corporate tax rate, XD represents the fraction of debt, or the leverage ratio, and RD represents the cost of debt. We can then calculate the weighted average cost of capital for the levered firm according to the traditionalist or the realistic view of markets. WACC is equal to XDRD multiplied by 1 minus TC plus XERE. And please note that the 1 minus TC term is basically the tax shield effect of corporate taxes on interest and on debt. And please remember also that the total market value of a firm is equal to the debt plus the equity, and that we have defined the financial leverage to be XD, which is equal to D divided by V, and that is equal to D divided by D plus E, which you can see on the slide. Finally, XD plus XE is equal to 1. In other words, D plus E is equal to V. Now, I have introduced to you the qualitatively what the weighted average cost of capital curve looks like in reality. I've also introduced some of the formulas that you can use to calculate the weighted average cost of capital for a levered firm. And in the following lecture, we will do a practical numerical example using these formulas and this concept in order to calculate what the best capital structure or what the optimal amount of leverage that a firm should have based on the realistic model of capital structure. So I would like to stop the new material for this course right here, and let us go over some of the concepts and formulas and diagrams that we have spoken about in this lecture. We began the lecture reviewing our basic concepts regarding the weighted average cost of capital and WACC. We mentioned that the weighted average cost of capital is derived from the required rate of returns for the different forms of capital in the company, whether it is debt or equity. We then went into the concept of standalone business risk and the risk of a firm. The total risk is equal to the business risk plus the financial risk. And in this lecture, we focused on the financial risk aspect. Financial risk, we mentioned, increases when the financial leverage of a company increases. Financial leverage is defined as the debt divided by the total value of the firm. Please remember that when we are talking about capital structure, and particularly when we're talking about the concept of value in financial management here, we are talking about market value. We're not talking about book value. And there can be a difference. Balance sheets and financial statements and financial accounting are prepared based on the book value and historical costs. As I mentioned right at the beginning of this course, financial statements, generally speaking, are not based on market value. Other than perhaps the market value of investments, which appears as a single item on the asset side, when you talk about the balance sheet as a whole, we're talking about book values. But here, when we're talking about capital structure, we are talking about market value, the total market value of a firm. And we mentioned that the financial leverage increases the financial risk. And we also mentioned that the financial leverage when it is defined as the debt divided by the total value, that this is the total market value of the firm, the total market value of all of its assets. Now, financial leverage can sometimes be good when the overall rate of return of a firm, EBIT divided by total assets, is higher than the cost of debt or interest rate, then financial leverage can be good. Why? Because a small amount of increase in the EBIT can cause a very large increase in the return on equity for the shareholders. We also mentioned that our attention is fixed on the shareholder and the return on equity for the shareholder. Why? Because it is the shareholder who is the center of financial management. And our objective is to maximize the shareholder's wealth. Why? Because he is the owner of the company. We then moved into the theory for the pure Miller-Modigliani view of the markets, which is an idealistic view where there are no taxes, no transaction costs, no bankruptcy costs, and no, or everybody has the same amount of information. And in this particular case, this idealistic case, we mentioned that changes in the level of debt in a company or changes in the capital structure or leverage have absolutely no impact on the value of the firm, and they have no impact on the weighted average cost of capital for the firm. And in this case, we can separate investment decisions from corporate financing decisions entirely. We went over the graph of the MM view, and please remember that in that particular case, the weighted average cost of capital line is flat and constant because the value of the firm is not changing. However, even in the pure Miller-Modigliani view, there is such a thing as financial risk, and that is why you see that the cost of debt increases and also the cost of equity increases. And why is the cost of equity higher than the cost of debt? Well, we spoke about that concept in detail earlier when we spoke about risk and return and capital asset pricing model. There is a risk premium associated with stocks because of their company-specific and market risk. So, according to the Miller-Modigliani view, the cost of equity and debt do increase, but the weighted average capital of the entire firm does not. And we went over some formulas for calculating the weighted average cost of capital for the firm. That is equal to RDXD plus REXE. We also came up with a formula for calculating the cost of equity in the case of the pure Miller-Modigliani. And kindly review that formula as well. And then finally, we talked about the traditionalist view, which is the practical view. It is the realistic picture of the markets. In this traditionalist view of the markets, which is a more accurate view, more realistic view of the markets, what we see is that the weighted average cost of capital for a firm is not fixed. As the capital structure and the amount of borrowing that a firm takes changes, the weighted average cost of capital of the firm also changes, and the value of the firm changes. And whether it goes up or down depends on the relative movement or increases in the cost of equity and cost of debt, and various other factors that we'll talk about in the following lecture. So the point to remember is the difference in the shape of the WACC line for the case of the pure Miller-Modigliani view and the traditionalist view of the markets. And in the case of the traditionalist view, which is more realistic, the point to remember is that the WACC line is a broad U-shaped parabola, and it has a minimum, and that minimum corresponds to the optimal capital structure. The best point for the firm to operate at in terms of its leverage or its debt to equity ratio. And if you take a look at the slide which shows the curved WACC line, then we can also go through some of the formulas that we spoke about in this lecture. So just a quick recap, the traditionalist view graph has been shown on the slide. You can see that the cost of debt and the cost of equity are increasing at an accelerating pace, and most importantly, the WACC line is no longer flat, but rather it is curved, and it is a U-shaped parabola with a minimum that corresponds to the optimal capital structure. The formula for the WACC in the case of the leveraged company is equal to RD multiplied by 1 minus TC times XD plus REXE, taking the taxes into account. We will talk more about these formulas in the next lecture. So, with this, I close the material for this particular lecture. Please go over chapter 13 in Brigham and Gapensky and go over some of the practice problems and the homework assignments, because that is the best way to come up with an understanding of how the weighted average cost of capital calculations are done. I thank you for your kind attention and patience, and look forward to seeing you in the next lecture. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, the Virtual University of Pakistan, and Mubashir Humayun, I thank you. Khuda Hafiz and Assalamu Alaikum.